This is Victor Dandridge, and you're listening to Thinking Outside of the Long Box.
Hey, Latverian girl, how's your kingdom? Subjugated to a madman with no face, or are you just a mindless minion? Is your border still patrolled?
Hey everybody, and welcome once again to Thinking Outside the Long Box. As always, I am one of your hosts, Thomas Strange, in beautiful downtown Memphis. And to my immediate right, down in beautiful Louisiana, is Mike Manning. How's it going, Mike?
It is going excellent. And how are things up in beautiful Boston, Tom Boucher?
Things are nice and pleasant today. We expect snow tomorrow.
A lot of us have been snowed in right now. We're recording this in January. Just about 2 weeks away from our big group get-together down in Pensacola, Florida for Pensacon. We're all looking forward to that, right?
Yes, we are. Everybody's looking forward to it. People all around the world are looking forward to it. People who don't even know about it are looking forward to it.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit at the end when we talk about plugs, but we have four different things coming up, and I can't wait to talk about it. But today we have a great podcast. We're going to go off format just a little bit. Instead of recommending different books or going into a character, we're going to do little known or not so great supervillains. One of our favorite topics when we're sitting around drinking is, how did this guy even become a supervillain? So we're just going to kind of play this one fast and loose and just kind of talk about some of our favorite punching bags for some of our favorite superheroes. Now, every Hulk Hogan needs a Barry Horowitz. You know, sooner or later, someone's got to get in there and just get crushed. And some of these are the supervillains to do it. Mikey, why don't you start us off with one of your favorite supervillain punching bags and a cape?
All right, well, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to go with an entire group of supervillains who are one of my favorite punching bag groups. That is the Injustice League International. So if you remember back in the 80s or the 90s, after they had done away with the Justice League of America, they decided to reboot it as Justice League International and make it have a funny bent. And Giffen was doing an excellent run on the series. He decided to pair up a bunch of supervillains who were just horrible. It was headed up by Major Disaster, also included the Clue Master, a scrub villain from Batman, the Clock King, also another scrub villain from Batman, along with Multiple Man, who was actually one of the bad guys from Challengers of the Unknown, and a giant behemoth called Big Sur, who had the IQ of a small child, even though he was super strong. And then rounding up the team was the Mighty Bruce. Now, the Mighty Bruce had no superpowers whatsoever. This is my favorite character of the league because he just happened to have been Major Disaster's roommate in jail. And
We call him Cellies.
Yeah, his cellmate. And then later on, he had an apartment, so everybody crashed at the Mighty Bruce's apartment, which made him an integral member of the team. He had no costume, nothing. He just hung out with the guys because, you know, he was fun to hang out with.
And the only guy that had a place to, you know, meet and do supervillain stuff. That's important.
Right. I mean, you know, having a lair is important, even if it's a crappy lair.
So if I'm going to recommend one comic about these guys for you to read, although you could read about them in Justice League Europe and Justice League International, I would say just go straight to Justice League Antarctica. The whole premise of the comic book is the Injustice Gang are trying to rob a bank, but when they get there, somebody else is robbing the bank, and they're ticked off that somebody beat them to it. So they beat up the guys who are robbing the bank, and suddenly everybody thinks they're superheroes. So Max Lord decides, I'm going to just hire these guys and put them in Antarctica to just get rid of them so they won't cause any more problems for the Justice League. And he decides to send over the incompetent Green Lantern, Gnort, with him, along with the Red Skier, who was their parody version of the Silver Surfer, who was the Galactus Herald parody. It was a very funny series. Them fighting off killer penguins is a sight to behold. So I highly recommend Justice League Antarctica. What about you, Tom?
One of my favorite characters is Dr. Dinosaur from Atomic Robo. He's a dinosaur who's supposedly super intelligent. He claims he is from the future and that he built a time machine and traveled from the future. But Atomic Robo continually points out that it's impossible for him to have traveled in time from the future because the Earth's continual rotation and movement would make it impossible for him to still be on Earth if he had actually traveled in time. And it's just a hilarious character that Atomic Robo just beats endlessly. And I really recommend that series.
That's a great one, too. I love some of the memes I've seen of Dr. Dinosaur, some of the funniest things ever. I'm going to go way back and talk about a character that the Big Red Cheese, everyone's favorite Captain Marvel, used to beat the hell out of, and that would be Mr. Banjo. Do you guys remember Mr. Banjo?
I do not remember Mr. Banjo. Do tell me about Mr. Banjo.
Mr. Banjo was a supervillain who played a banjo, which is villainous in of itself. But he first came on the scene way back at the very start of Captain Marvel. And it was found out that he was encoding Nazi messages in his banjo music. That was his superpower. His superpower was Morse code hidden in the banjo music. I thought that was hilarious. Later on, he does get the power to hypnotize people when he becomes part of the Monster Society of Evil. But he was just kind of a fat guy in a funny straw hat sending messages to the Nazis using his banjo. And no one could figure out how the Nazis were getting these messages except the Big Red Cheese.
I cannot believe that they are making a Black Adam movie before they are making a Mr. Banjo movie. That does not compute. I think The Rock could play Mr. Banjo better than Black Adam.
I know. Absolutely. I mean, this was the role he was born to play. I would like to point out that my good friend Christian Stanfield, who is a musician here in town with the Side Street Steppers, we talk about Mr. Banjo constantly. He's a comic book nerd and a banjo historian who gives talks about banjos and early banjo music at all these conferences. And he loves talking about how the banjo was first an African-American musical instrument that no white people would play because there was a stigma about African-Americans only play this. And then the banjo totally became a white trash musical instrument somewhere before Deliverance, somewhere around there. And now, of course, it's almost obliterated from African-American culture, even though it very much started as an African-American instrument. Just throwing that in there.
So since I've never heard of Mr. Banjo, and from your banter with Mike, I can guess that the Captain Marvel you're talking about is DC's Shazam and not, say, one of the multiple Captain Marvels in the Marvel universe.
Well, you really can't call that character Shazam because that's just what Shazam was, just something he would yell.
Yes, but he's from the Shazam comic.
He is definitely from the Shazam. Well, he's from the comic book called Captain Marvel.
Yeah, that's the Fawcett comic, actually. He did not appear in the DC comic universe. When they redid Captain Marvel in the 70s, I have most of them. I don't remember. I'm sure I'd remember him if I saw him. And I know he wasn't in the Power of Shazam that they had later on in the 90s and then the 2000s.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is only a Captain Marvel and Marvel family kind of super villain. All right, how about one more for you, Mike? Let's do one more each, and then we'll do some of our little bits.
Well, I'm going to go with Stiltman.
I love Stiltman. You can't say he's a bad superhero.
Oh, he's horrible.
Oh, he's pretty bad.
Oh, my God. I can't believe his power is he can get tall. I mean, really, he's just a punching bag for Daredevil. That's all he is. Name me one good heist or something that Stiltman has ever done.
He stole a purse from the top of the Empire State Building.
I think he's just making cool. this up.
But that'd be really cool, right?
He has equipment worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, and he's sticking to purse robbery? Come on.
I mean, let's face facts. He could make more money standing outside of a car dealership than he could robbing purses.
See, now I'd read that comic.
Stiltman falls on hard times by a Volvo.
I'm sorry. There was one comic that reminds me of Stiltman to a T. Is when and it was in the Daredevil series. He teamed up with the Spider-Man at the time was Dr. Octopus, and Stiltman had stolen some of Doc Ock's technology and put it into his stilts. And Doc Ock was furious about that, and he almost killed Stiltman because of it.
And it's a death that I'm sure we all would welcome.
We would all mourn. It's true. All right, what about you guys? Anybody else?
I just want to point out one thing that in the just because I did a little research on Stiltman, and I found that there were a couple other stilt people, and Lady Stiltman appears in Daredevil. Now, just the name Lady Stiltman is the funniest thing on the planet. So I'm just putting that out there. She was a small member of Misty Knight's villain subgroup for Heroes for Hires for a while. So she fought Misty Knight for a while. Heroes for Hires, yeah, I'm just saying Lady Stiltman was out there.
Lady Stiltman sounds pretty horrible.
Yeah.
But since we're going way back with Mr. Banjo, why don't we talk about Egg Foo, the Wonder Woman nemesis, who appeared in 1965 and for some unknown reason has been brought back time and time again. Just a horrible character. I mean, he's brought back in Wonder Woman 128, 129. Just a horribly racist character of a giant egg that could hit people with his mustache. Absolutely horrible.
That was all pretty terrible stuff. All right, for my last one,
Wait a second. I got to defend Egg Foo here.
All right. Are you going to defend Egg Foo, the giant egg, or are you going to defend Egg Foo?
I'm going to defend the later versions of Egg Foo because
the computer.
The computer. Chang Zhu. I thought when I saw him, still a giant egg, but now with robot tentacles, and he's not the size of a missile silo anymore. He's just
not the size of a house anymore. Yes.
Yeah, he's just very large computer that happens to be shaped like an egg. I thought it was a great pull from a really horrible era and just revitalizing these really bad characters and trying to put a fresh spin on them. So I thought. I like Chang Zhu.
See, I always thought Chang Zhu just kind of looked like a parody of MODOK.
He does look a lot like MODOK. I'll give you that, too. But he's a little more round and oval.
He is a little more round, but he's kind of the same idea.
But he doesn't float, though.
He's got these appendages that barely make him able to move. Whereas MODOK just kind of floats around, but he still looks kind of similar and is supposed to be like an alien that's a computer and that's determined to do evil. So he just seems like a parody of MODOK to me.
All right, I'll give you that. He's a second class MODOK. He's no Lady Stiltman, but
definitely no Lady Stiltman. Which, now that I'm thinking about it, might be the first trans comic book character, possibly.
Lady Stiltman.
Absolutely not, because I'm going to talk about the first transgender. Because my second one is going to be He-She, the hermaphrodite bad guy. The deadliest of the species is female. The strongest of the species is the male. Combine these with the killer instinct, and you have the most cunning and most vicious killer of all time, He-She. Left side is femme fatale. The right side is all man. This unlikely supervillain was half male, half female, exactly down the center of his or her body, depending on which way you were looking. So if she stood with the right silhouette, she was female. If she stood left silhouette, she was male. And this was the supervillain for someone called Gangbusters. And this was from 1943's Boy Comics number 9. So He-She, when he first appears, goes to a boarding house, murders the landlady and her cat, buries her in the cellar in a gruesome way. And that's the very beginning of this kind of kid-friendly 1943 comic book. Whenever the Crime Buster would fight He-She, he would turn to the right side and be the guy and beat the hell out of him. And if he got the upper hand, he would turn to the left side and start screaming, "Rape!" So people would come and help her while Crime Buster yelled, "No, this is not a woman, and I'm not raping her." So He-She, horrifyingly inappropriate in so many levels, but also the comic book and the graphics and everything, including the monkey that is the sidekick of the Crime Buster of the time, is hilarious and definitely worth a look. So now we're going to go in our normal segments, which is front of the long box, back of the long box. Mikey, why don't you tell us about some new superheroes, or at least relatively new superheroes or villains that are worth checking out for their comic or just uselessness?
All right, I'm going to go with it's the series just ended last year, or excuse me, 2 years ago now. It was called The Superior Foes of Spider-Man. You can pick up those graphic novels on the relative cheap. It only lasted, I think, 17 issues. But it was by one of my favorite writers, Dick Spencer. If you've listened to previous podcasts, you've heard me rant and rave about him on Astonishing Ant-Man and the all-new Captain America. The Superior Foes of Spider-Man focuses around one of Spider-Man's biggest villains, the Sinister Six. However, the Sinister Six are not six. There are five villains in this case because they like that, having that possible sixth villain out there to confuse people. The leader of this motley crew is Boomerang, not Captain Boomerang, but the Marvel Boomerang.
The vastly inferior version of the Boomerang villains, in my humble opinion.
Yes, who a former baseball player who was approached by an evil organization to turn him into to give him superpowers. He happened to be from Australia, so they gave him a Boomerang theme.
Was it a sex thing?
It was not a sex thing, although.
Just to put it into context, that was like the first thing he said when he saw the supervillain organization come to his room to recruit him, all in black robes. He looks up from his bed, a forlorn and despotic man, and he says, "Is this a sex thing?"
And they're like, "No, why would it be a sex thing?"
Because you're three guys in robes showing up in my boarding house, but okay.
Yeah. There's also Beetle, which is the daughter of the Spider-Man foe Beetle.
No, sorry.
She's just taken over the Beetle. It's the daughter of Hammerhead, right?
Tombstone,
sorry. There were so many different Spider-Man villains in this. I get confused. Overdrive, who has the ability to make any car he's in souped up.
Which is a great power.
The Speed Demon, who is the most hilarious speedster you will ever find, especially when he steals that little kid's dog. Because he had to teach him a lesson. And the Shocker, who is so scared of everything, he's just hilarious. But yes, highly recommend this. If you haven't read it, again, The Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
Yeah, I really like that one too. You got me into that particular series. And boy, I tell you, you'll be hard-pressed to find a funnier run than that. Was it a 10-issue run?
17.
17 issue run. It's pretty damn funny. Tommy, what do you got in the old back of the long box?
I would have to say, being an Iron Man fan, one of my favorite bad heroes, somebody that I thought was always kind of useless, was the Unicorn. He was from the Soviet states. He was the assistant to the scientist who built the Crimson Dynamo. And basically he was outfitted with a helmet that could have energy blasts come out of its horn, if you will. I always thought he was one of the stupidest characters ever, and he was tragically, psychologically flawed in so many ways. And he always just used to get a pummeling from Iron Man every single comic that I ever read him about with him in it. He would just constantly be pummeled by Iron Man. So he's my kind of favorite useless guy, just because I don't think I'd like to see him again.
I always kind of liked seeing the Unicorn, but he was ridiculous. And I can't remember him ever, like, very much like Barry Horowitz in professional wrestling. I don't really remember him ever really coming out on top on anything.
He really didn't. I mean, he always had psychological problems. He was brainwashed by the Soviets into trying to get the Crimson Dynamo back. And he just was tragically flawed time and time again, and just endlessly was looking for a beating from Iron Man.
Maybe he was just into that.
Maybe.
It might have been a sexual thing. A couple of the supervillains had to, like, just trump because they were just so good at it. I'm going to talk about, you know, when I like to talk about social relevance in comic books. One of the few things that has been taboo in a lot of comic books for a long time has always been suicides. There hasn't been a lot of storylines dealing with it or around it. It's kind of a bummer of a storyline. But I think the way it was handled best was a supervillain named Red Mask. Now, Red Mask had a arsenic or a death touch. Anyone he touched immediately died. Another villain comes to mind by the name of Deadly Earnest. He had the same thing. He had a cyanide touch. He was a supervillain in the Marvel Universe who often fought Alpha Flight. Now, Red Mask, the thing that makes him so tragic is he didn't want to be a supervillain. He has this power that would make him the greatest supervillain of all time, but, you know, basically he didn't want to, you know, kill anybody. He wanted to be a hero. The story that I hope everyone will go out and get shows up in Animal Man, and it shows the death of the Red Mask. He is on top of a ledge looking very forlorn, wondering about his life, wondering what he could have done. And then he starts thinking, if I only had the power of flight, it would have been just so much better than this death touch. And as he's sitting on the edge, he decides, well, maybe I do. And that's how he ends his life. It's a very sad story, and it's one of those stories that stuck with me for probably more than a decade, I would say. How long ago do you think that one came out there, Mikey?
Oh, that came out in the 90s.
Yeah.
'89.
Yeah, 89. That one's really – I've never – you know, there's been a couple – I had to ask Mike today what that villain's name was because I couldn't remember the name. But I remember all the pictures from the comic book, and I remember the storyline very well. It was very poignant, very well written, and really, really made you think. And it was a terrific comic book.
It is true. You don't see a lot of suicides in comics unless it's doing the noble thing and kind of staying behind until the bomb's about to blow up, to make sure everybody else gets out okay.
Yeah, there are a few. One of the first ones ever shown was a young man falling to his death in a Spider-Man comic book, which not only showed suicide, but also showed a little bit of the dangers of drugs. You know, half drug-related suicide, half suicide on that one.
Yeah, does a martyrdom count as a suicide, like Bucky in Captain America?
No, martyrdom is held up in high regard as something noble to do. I was talking about something where someone is so forlorn and despondent, they have no other recourse, they think, but to take their own life. That's much more taboo. The noble death, the I'll save the world by throwing myself on the bomb, that's a trope that has been shown in numerous comic books.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. Animal Man number 7 is probably one of my favorite comics of all time. Every time I see one of those, an Animal Man number 7 in any cheap bin, I always grab that copy and I give them out to my friends because It was written by Grant Morrison, and that was my first experience with Grant Morrison was this comic. And after that, I became a huge Grant Morrison fan to the point where anything he writes, sometimes I don't understand what he's writing, but I still buy it because there's a chance it's going to be brilliant. And that was what it was for me. Animal Man got really weird the more Grant Morrison wrote, but for me, that is the perfect Grant Morrison story. Single issue, focused on one character and, you know, his poor, sad life. I mean, and all because a meteor gave him a horrible power. He had no choice but to become a supervillain.
It's funny that he would have been a much happier man if he were evil. He could have just cackled maniacally and touch cops all day.
Yeah, it was his own humanity that made him miserable.
Yeah. Sad. Sad but true. Does anyone else have any one last one they want to throw out there just for giggles and grins?
Well, do you know how I feel about the owl?
Oh, the owl. Now, there's a character that was only Daredevil had a problem fighting. The owl could glide silently and was silent, and it gave Daredevil no end of problems, but like Foggy Nelson punched him in the face once, as I recall. Like, hey, man, there's an owl coming. What? Right behind you, man. There's a freaking owl.
However, the owl is featured prominently in The Superior Foes of Spider-Man. Again, I'm bringing it back around. Yeah, everyone should read that comic series.
Yeah, the owl was a punching bag for any other. The vulture got his butt kicked a lot, too. He was like the only octogenarian supervillain I can think of right off the top of my head.
He truly was the only octogenarian that I can think of, too. Even though Quicksilver always kind of looked a little older because of his gray hair. But
yeah, we should do one on...
It's hard to know how old Dr. Savannah is.
And that's true. Point. When it comes to octogenarian, we can do a whole episode on octogenarians. I think Madam Web, very, very up there. There's another one. Professor X is old, but I wouldn't put him quite in the octogenarian section yet. Of course, Logan.
Yeah.
Wolverine.
That's true.
Might not look it, but, you know, got a couple of years on him. Galactus.
Well, let's not forget Magneto. I mean, he was a little boy during the World War II, but that would make him an octogenarian now.
By quite a bit, actually, yeah. All right, so that's everything we got for today's podcast. It was great talking to everybody. Let's talk a little bit about the upcoming trip to Florida. We're going to be in Pensacola, Florida from, I believe, the 16th to the 20th. Does that sound right to anybody?
It sounds a little early.
I'm terrible with date. There it is, the 18th to the 21st. I got it now. The actual event is the 19th, 20th, and 21st. We'll be doing four different panels. Mike, why don't you talk about the ones that you're sitting on, or I should say moderating.
Yeah, on Saturday we're going to be doing our horrible, 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 horrible stereotypes in comic books, which will also feature some of the characters we talked about today, including Egg Foo, along with some other characters we've talked about in previous issues like the Mandrill and Ebony White.
Yeah, I thought about doing the Mandrill in this one, but his power is actually pretty darn good. Tommy, what are some of the ones you'll be sitting on?
I will also be sitting on the Civil Rights and Social Justice panel, where we talk about different comic books and how they were affecting social rights in the real world. We'll talk about a bunch of characters that we've talked about on this this podcast, like Luke Cage and some of the X-Men and a lot of other different characters and their relevance in trying to help enact social change in the world throughout the ages.
Those are going to be great ones. We're also doing two others. One is Civil Disobedience in comic books, which I'm really looking forward to, where we can show how different superheroes participate in civil disobedience. We'll be talking a lot about Neil Adams. We'll be talking a little bit about the X-Men. We'll be talking about Civil War. That one's going to be a fun one. And one that we've never done before is going to be Lex was right, how Metropolis's favorite bald punching bag was right all along, and Superman is a super menace. I will be arguing that Superman is not a menace, and my good friend Mikey will be arguing the other stupid, 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 stupid side of this. Right, Mike?
Stupid as in the correct side, yes. Hey, Tom, before we go, I have to say a couple things. First, I want to thank Kirby Crackle for providing all the music that you hear on our podcast. You should go to KirbyCrackle.com and listen to their music, or even better, go buy their music, because I'm sure they would appreciate it. They are an awesome geek rock band. Also, we are going to be including an interview with Victor Dandridge at the end of this podcast, so keep on listening. He is a independent comic publisher, writer, from his desk at Vantage In-House Productions. He also does an excellent YouTube channel called Black, White, and Red All Over. If you want to hear reviews of latest comic books, Victor is very personable. And although I don't agree with him on everything, he's usually pretty spot on.
And I really like his book, Kindergartenians. I think that's our favorite that he does.
Yes. If you want an all-age comic, I totally recommend the Kindergartenians. And it's, I believe, also available on Comixology.
Terrific, terrific. Tommy, you got anything else to plug before I get us out of here?
I don't have anything to plug this week except for Pensacon, which we've already plugged enough.
All right. So once again, from beautiful downtown Memphis, this is Thomas Strange.
And from New Orleans, this is Mike Manning.
And from Boston, it's Tom Boucher.
You notice that I'm the only one with a beautiful city. I'm just saying. All right. Love you guys. Have a great weekend. Talk to you later.
This is Victor Dandridge, and you're listening to Thinking Outside of the Long Box.
Now, you have a YouTube channel, is that correct?
Yes. I have, I'm a part of two. So I have one under Vantage In-House, which is my own imprint, TV piece, and we have Unconventional on there, as well as the VIPs of self-publishing. But the one I'm most well-known for is through Comic Town TV, where I'm co-host of Black, White, and Red All Over, the weekly comic book review series.
So you read a lot of comics, I'm guessing. What is your current favorite Marvel comic?
Oh, my God. Okay. Current favorite Marvel. This is a toss-up, okay? So I'm loving the Ultimates. That's a good one. A-Force is really, really good. I'm trying to think, like, okay, in this new iteration of Marvel that is supposed to be post-Secret War, it's kind of hard to, like, truly name, like, what's my favorite. I might actually have to bite the bullet and say the Visions. The Visions might be my favorite. And then we'll have Inhumans, not Uncanny Inhumans, but Inhumans as number two, really closely riding that wave because I'm such an Inhumans fan, and Chucky Soul is doing such a great job. But the Visions right now, because it's so intricate, might actually be my number one top pick.
Are you a DC fan also?
I am. I'm not one of those guys that just picks one side. I love DC as well. If I had to pick my favorite from that one, let's see. Snyder's Batman run is definitely strong. I'm really loving Sinestro. I'm loving Sinestro because they're taking that character and making him more than just your, mustache-wielding villain. Like, he has actually got a lot of context, a lot of layers, and it's something they're doing right now with the Sinestro Corps taking the place of the Green Lantern Corps and protecting people is genius. I love it.
Awesome. So you write your own comics. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your comics?
Sure. I write under my imprint, Vantage In-House Productions, and we have a range of different titles. We have five currently that we showcase and promote. We have Wonder Care Presents The Kindergartens, which is all ages friendly. We have Origins Unknown, which is a little bit more teen-centric. We have Young Adult with The Trouble with Love, and then more mature fare with the Samaritan series, and then Old Crazy and the 40 Ounces of Death.
And where can people get your comics?
You find mine. You can get to them online. We definitely are supported through Comixology, Amazon, Indie Planet, or you can hit me up directly. If you email me at VantageInHouse @gmail.com, let me know which books you're interested in, and we can send you physical copies because I know I'm one of them. I love the physical reading material in your hand. That's some of the best stuff ever.
Now, I've been
big fan of the Kindergartians. I'm not going to lie. And I love it because you teach science lessons in the comic itself. Is that on? Are you trying to make it as educational as possible, or did it just kind of happen naturally?
For us, we were looking at it where we wanted to be something so all ages friendly that the idea of teaching is kind of rooted in there. And so, yeah, we aim to do as many different geeky but educational challenges as possible. Okay, I'll give you a heads up. In issue 4, it's not out yet, we actually have a piece where it's the challenge of how many superpowers can you name and put in alphabetical order. So we have like Blackboard having a registry of superpowers, and he gives you a couple of them, but then we have spaces for you to actually fill in other superpowers, but you have to do it in alphabetical order just to kind of challenge you and see what kind of weird things you can come up with.
Oh, you know, we're totally going to do that on my podcast now that you've mentioned it. That's without a doubt. So if you could write for one of the big two, what character would you like to write?
Okay, so I will separate this out into different places. If I could write for DC, I want Captain Marvel. I want the Shazam character. I love Shazam. I'm a big Superman fan as well, but there's something untapped about Shazam that I really would love to sink my teeth into and play around with Billy as a teenager and what that does to him in the whole Marvel family. On the Marvel side, wow, that's a tough one. There are a lot of characters that are very interesting, very unique. I might challenge myself and throw something crazy and do a Captain Britain story, just because of the mythos, the regality of him, and then the actual superheroic nature that I think is untapped with that one. Yeah, I would tackle Captain Britain.
Yeah, do you like his new costume or his classic costume better?
I mean, that's hard to say. Okay, I'm an Alan Davis fan to the fullest, so I kind of like that iteration from Excalibur. That's kind of my favorite. Yeah.
I'm old school. I like him in his first appearance as Spider-Man with the lion on his chest on everything.
That's a good one. That's a good one. There's just something that really speaks to me in almost a not Captain America but Captain Britain sort of, you know, piece with that kind of helmet piece that he wears. Although I will have to admit the mask was really cool with his hair out. Oh, you're challenging me on this one. I might backtrack. I'm sorry. I might take it back. Ooh, I don't know now. I don't know.
That's all right. You'll come around to my way of thinking eventually.
I know. I was like, ooh, you're right. That one is pretty sweet. Because that was the one that was in How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way, man. Like, that's a classic.
That.
Yeah. Ooh, I don't know. I'm sorry, Alan. I might back up. I'm sorry.
That's all right. So let's talk about some independent comics that you like. What are a couple series that you would recommend to people to check out?
I would definitely have you check out Virgin Wolf by Alvin Ball. That's a fantastic series. Alvin is also the writer on One Nation, which is actually under 133 Art. That's a Jason Reeves art imprint. That one is a very interesting piece. I put it in context of like the Samaritan. We're talking about an African-American hero, but he's actually like a trained soldier, and he kind of comes into his powers accidentally and is, you know, still working on how to be a hero in a politically based structure. It's very interesting, very supercharged with some of the cool stuff there. If you're a horror fan, check out The Horror Show from Broken Icon. That's James Maddox and Todd Beisel. Wonderful series. If you want to see some of my earlier work, there's a series called Hotshot. It was originally produced through Freestyle Comics, and it actually just got picked up through Legacy Rising, which is a new imprint that will be launching this year. And they'll be redoing the first 6 issues that I wrote and then continuing the series on under that imprint. And I think the entire universe that was created for it is going to actually fall under that imprint. And you'll see a lot of cool stuff that we haven't seen before. It's going to be a lot of fun.
One of the things we do when we go to Comic Cons is we do panel discussions. One of our panels is on horrible, horrible, horrible stereotypes in comics. What is your favorite horrible stereotype?
My favorite horrible stereotype might have to be, oh, this is so bad. I'm sorry. It makes me sound bad. I love the damsel in distress. I know it is so cliche and silly, and it almost is demeaning to women. I am so sorry. But there is something so nuanced and classic about the idea of the intrepid female character who basically has no fear goes at situations that they really have no business. They don't have any powers. They don't carry any weapons. And they run into these things headlong and then inevitably go in too far. I think it's something that is like somewhat... It almost complements the female character because she's not afraid. It's not that, you know, in the sense of like Clark Kent would never run into this situation because Clark Kent is innately a coward. Now, Superman will come in and save the day, but Lois has far more heart than even Clark does. And so she runs into this whole situation and then inevitably it gets over her head. And then somebody even more greater in Superman has to come save her. But in that sense, there's something so classically like it's a backhanded compliment. And I think that's the part that I love the most about it.
One of the great things about stereotypes is you can always turn it on its side. You can always do the whole damsel in distress, kind of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The first time you see her, she's walking down the alley, the vampire hops out, and you're like, oh, this is going to be bad for her, and they totally reverse it.
That is so true, so true. And she totally aces the vampire. You're like, whoa, what just happened? You're like, yeah, that's right. Buffy, Vampire Slayer. Like, that's good. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
All right, so... where can people see you? Because you're very charismatic, and they need to see you in person.
I'm at shows all the time. I actually just put up on my website a calendar that's telling people where I'll be throughout the year. Obviously, it'll be updated if any shows are canceled or I end up going to different places. But definitely find me at shows. You can find me weekly on Black, White, and Red All Over. If you subscribe to Comic Town TV, you'll get an update every Wednesday or Thursday when the show airs. So you can find me there. You can find me on Twitter, at Vantage In-House. We can talk. On Instagram, at Vantage In-House. I'm always up for chatting it up with anybody and everybody.
All right, and so if you like him, that's where you should find him. If you hate him, you can avoid him with impeccable accuracy if you go to his website, and he'll tell you where he'll be, and you will have all the rest of the planet to be at. Thank you very much.
Thank you so very much.
Every time I build a robot, every time I sink a ship, every time I throw a girl off of a big old building or abandoned bridge, it seems you're always there to stop me. I've had enough, I'm sick of it. No more scheming, no more stealing, I think I'm done with all of this. So I took my death ray and put it on the shelf.
Don't bash what you hate, promote what you love.